You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
How do you text with this thing?
How much had they don't text?
Machete improvises.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in a hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 111 for the 4th of December, 2010. And I am David McVeigh, your host, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
That was so easy, man. Like, that one wasn't even... Why'd you even bother? I mean...
I had to make an easy one for this week because nobody got last week's at all. By the way, for those who don't go into our forum, last week's clip was from My Science Project, starring Dennis Hopper. So, 1980s comedy film, kind of about time travel. It was a good, fun film.
Yeah, I think we maybe need to go a little bit more difficult than that.
Delta, he didn't just say the name of the movie, he said it twice. So if you can't get this week's. Anyway, alrighty. Let's get on to Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. This week, we live in hope that we have something good as we attempt to review M. Night Shyamalan's new production of Devil. Now, I say new production because M. Night Shyamalan did not write...
We need to be really specific on that because everyone's still calling it an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Yeah, and we've got to be very clear about this. M. Night Shyamalan did not write or direct Devil. No. He produced it, and it was his story. Basically, M. Night Shyamalan's plan was to have a series of films called The Night Chronicles, and different directors and different writers would come in, and they're like Twilight Zone episodes, almost. Yep. It's like these short little weirdo films that come out, and, you know, he produces them all and comes up with these little stories from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, you know, this concept of his stories.
Yeah.
Does it work? We'll find out when we review the film. Of course, we have our usual little bit of entertainment buzz, and we also have a brand new list of five. Now, this list of five, I've got to tell you, was a hearty. Mm. Now, that was a hearty because it is a list of five films set in confined places.
Yeah.
This is different from a list from a few weeks ago where we did a film about claustrophobic movies. Mm. And it's kind of hard because you start getting crossover between these as well, and you start going, wow, this is actually a harder list than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll do our best on that. I still don't think my list is as good as it could have been, but there are some good films on there. So we'll see how we go. And I'm curious to see what you put on there.
I've got my list. Ready
so
to go.
We'll see how we go. All right, let's get on to our feature review this week. Our feature review is the film Devil, and I have a picture of the poster, which I actually quite like the poster. I think the poster is quite clever.
I think the poster is quite clever.
Directed by John Eric Dowdle, I should say, D-O-W-D-L-E, Dowdle, and written by Brian Nelson, based on a story by M. Night Shyamalan, and we should say produced by M. Night Shyamalan as well. It stars... Now, I'm probably going to slaughter a couple of these names because there's one in particular that's a little bit hard. But it's Chris Messina, Logan Marshall Green, Jenny O'Hara. These are the easy ones. Then we have the Australian actress. Now, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. I think it's Bojana Novakovic would be my guess.
Wow.
Bokeem Woodbine, Jeffrey Arend, Jacob Vargas, and Matt Craven. There are others as well, but these are kind of the key players. The plot is really simple. A group of people trapped in an elevator start being killed one by one. Fear and paranoia grip them because they don't know who's doing the killing or who is the killer. But then we start to realize that there is a possibility that the devil might really be among them. And this is basically the concept.
I love the way you say that. It's just so supportive of the film's...
I'm trying, man. All right, let's have a look at the trailer. And we'll come back and we'll talk about this in just a minute.
Thank you. Hey, lady, you gotta sign in.
Do I look like such a threat?
Don't blame me. You got procedures.
You hold that?
Sorry.
Thanks for your help.
Don't mention it. This is not good.
Why is elevator 6 in inspection mode?
Oh, come on, man.
What's happening?
Nothing, just relax. What was that?
Oh my God. No.
You all right?
You're bleeding.
Oh my God.
It feels like something bit me.
Does anybody have anything sharp on them that might have cut her?
No.
You mind if we search your pockets?
Yes, I do mind. You mind if we search yours?
What was that?
Something's jamming it.
It's stuck.
Whoa. Don't come near me, any of you.
Back away from each other now.
Okay. Ooh, spooky.
Couldn't help it.
All right. Josh, what do you think?
Well, look, I mean, everybody knows that M. Night Shyamalan is probably not my favorite director in the world. in fact, I have a mild distaste for anything he touches because it all seems to turn to shit.
Really? No.
Now, look, I tried to go into this clear-headed. I like a good horror, and I like a good thriller. I like the concept. I really, really do. I like I've always liked the idea of playing people against each other because humans are such an interesting...
Absolutely. Paranoia is a great... Great
absolutely, subject. And especially in the confined spaces, there can't seem to get that
need
out.
More coffee.
what I really liked is you've got all these people in the room. I think all the actors straight out the gate. I want to say all the actors that were in that room do a fantastic job of what they were trying to do. Like all of these people play off each other really well. You've got that guy, the Indian dude, is so creepy.
The sleazy salesman.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know he doesn't mean to be, but he plays his character very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it should be made clear right off the bat that we didn't actually have a problem with any of the casting. The
absolutely.
Actors do the best that they can with the material that they've got.
Now, let's start getting into the storyline. So, as we go along through this escapade, you know, there's always that M. Night Shyamalan, badly written 13-year-old kind of a writing that you're expecting. So, the two things that immediately came to my mind is, yes, there's either a devil or they're going to do what I would have considered the smarter move, which would be to go with the concept of basically the fact that there was nothing in the room and you're playing either way. Look, those are your high school storyline finishes
yes.
that you would be expecting. Now, I think we can go into a spoiler zone later, so we'll leave that alone for now. As the storyline starts to unfold, the whole story starts to fall apart for me. Because the whole thing is, as you go through, number one, you have the one thing that M. Night Shyamalan just can't get away from, which is terrible exposition. And you've got to have that one character in all his films that just talks it out like we're so stupid we're not getting it. The
mm-hmm.
reality is, you're stupid, dude, not us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we all know what's going on. And if you're a competent director, which I think the director did a fantastic job, then everything will be explained through looks, gestures, the way that it's shot. We don't need exposition. You've got to learn that right away because it is what killed the film for me. the fact that you've got this guy standing in the background going, yeah, Holmes, I think this is what is happening. And I'm just sitting there going, if that guy doesn't shut up, I'm walking out. So
with the, incomplete with the jam sandwich analogy. So.
Yeah, it's look, I mean, it's horrible in that aspect. And the problem is it really defeats the purpose of the film. The other problem is what Dave pointed out the second we got out of the cinema, which is the level of cliches is staggering. Like, staggering. Every shot is just cliche after cliche.
I actually said the movie should have just been called Cliche rather than Devil, because that's how it felt. There's a stress. It's not scary.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is because you know everything that's going to happen.
Yeah.
As soon as you get into the rhythm of what M. Night is doing and you start... Because your first... sorry for interrupting, Josh, but... Your first reaction with a film like this is to try and figure out, because it's an M. Night Shyamalan film, you immediately start trying to figure out what the twist is going to be. So you sit there going, it could be this, it could be that, it could be this. 10 minutes into the film, you're now into the rhythm of the film, and you go, now I'm into the rhythm of the film, I know exactly what's going
to
happen.
Freak, it was nice to see you in the chat room for the first time. The thing that immediately jumped out at me though, Dave, and what really, really started to frustrate me is the fact that as you go through this film, it's almost like there's two films happening. You've got all the stuff happening outside and all the stuff happening inside.
And we had a theory, or you had a theory about how that was going to work, which didn't pan out,
which
would have been a much more interesting film.
Exactly. Like, it's one of those things when you get down to this base level that he works on from film point of view, it's like you have your amazing directors, like your world-changing top-class directors that you just have. You go in not expecting anything. You go in just going, this person could hit me with anything.
Take me for the ride.
Exactly. Then you go in with people like M. Night Shyamalan, where you're looking at it and going, how bad is this going to be? Like, in other words, you know that they're going to play the standard rules. It's like they've actually picked up the textbook of how to write films and just started copying notes. Like, that's how straight by the book it is. And this film is incredibly by the book. Mm. It's just every scene is a by the book textbook way of, you know, having a scene play out, or a textbook piece of dialogue. And it's just, like you say, there's a rhythm to it. And the more you get into the rhythm, the less anything matters. Mm. You just get more and more obsessed with going, now the lights are going to go off. What's going to happen? And the problem is...
It actually became a guessing game with the lights going off, because it wasn't a matter of, oh, somebody, what's going to happen while the lights are off? You know what's going to happen. Yeah. The question was, to whom?
Exactly.
And so it was like, okay, roll the dice. Which one goes now?
Yeah. Exactly. And it's not smart enough. And this is my problem. It's because if you have a competent set of people, like, say, Buried, and we as much as we argued over Buried, Buried was a well-made film.
Yeah, and it was a good script.
Exactly. You've got one guy in a box, right? You've got a bunch of people in an elevator. This should be your subject matter. Stay with that, right? If you want to run people outside, you know, if you want to have a storyline brushing over the top, that doesn't matter. The main key element to the storyline is in that room. We know that. It's in the title. It's in the way that, you know, you set up your film. We know that it's all going
to
be about that room.
Yeah, a film that is set in confined places doesn't mean that everything has to stay confined. You look at Die Hard. Die Hard is
actually a couple from my list are going to point out that exact point.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that Die Hard is basically in a confined space. He's stuck in the building with these terrorists. But we go outside. We see the cops outside. We see the FBI agents. Mm-hmm. But the predominance of the action takes place in that building. And so with this, you've got them in the elevator. You can have the people trying to figure out what's going on in that elevator. You can have them trying to investigate outside. But the focus has to be on those people in that elevator.
And the whole thing is, if you're going to just sort of lights on, lights off, one person dies, it just becomes like a bad, and I mean a badly written episode of kind of like your old British whodunit.
It's like Outer Limits.
Exactly.
Or it's like Outer Limits or what was the Raoul Dahl series? Chat room, help me out. His short story analogy anthology series. And you just look at it and go, or Twilight Zone, we come back to. I think M. Night Shyamalan is heavily influenced by Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
The whole idea of the sting in the tail and the whole bit. This is such Rod Serling writing. Mm. But Rod Serling was a good writer.
Mm. And M. Night's not. It stays focused on the concept in the Twilight Zone. Like, that, the whole episode is about this very obvious plot point, and that's why it's such good writing. It's very simple stories, but the simple story takes you on a good ride.
Hmm.
Whereas this just felt like it wasn't even a matter of prediction. Like, the whole thing...
Tales of the Unexpected. That was... That's what I was thinking of.
But the whole thing about these sort of episodes is it doesn't play out as a smart story if you don't give the audience the ability to figure out what's going on. Either play it one way or the other. Don't play it kind of down the middle where there's like clues, but none of them lead to anything because you're just trying to, you know, sort of sideline us away from the main story itself. I had such a problem with this film when I actually thought about it, like the next day when I actually sat down and actually thought about it, I got more angry at it because I sat down and went, I feel cheated. I feel like I walked into that cinema and it was like they had every possible aspect decent. Like they had a decent enough director, they had good actors, and the only thing that wrecked this film is what I hate so much, which is M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
And it was like originally I was saying to people, look, don't do that. Don't put it into that class. He is the producer, and he wrote.
But, unfortunately, it's one of those situations where M. Night's influence is so obviously so strong that even though somebody else wrote the screenplay, you know that you know, deep down in your gut, you know that M. Night rewrote this screenplay.
Mm.
He did it anonymously, but obviously because it's got his feeling all over it. Even though it's somebody else directing it, they're heavily influenced by M. Night. His presence on this film is evident. You can feel him all over this film.
Yeah.
Written and directed by somebody else, it still feels like an M. Night Shyamalan
film. And it's such a stain. It feels like a stain on the film. Like, it feels like if you had have removed him from this storyline, if you had have given a normal writer, a normal director, and that cast, I imagine that I would be saying, this was the thriller of the year, or something like that.
Think about it. If M. Night Shyamalan went to a writer-director combo and basically said, make a film about people trapped in an elevator and the devil is with them.
Yeah.
End of story, and then walked away.
Yeah.
Go make Airbender 2
if he was truly producing.
That's right.
Like
and
he
just,
was saying.
And just walk away from it and basically just arrange the funding, get that film going, and let them make the film. That I'm curious to see.
Yeah.
Then it can be from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. It's his basic core story.
You would have had much less simple concepts in the story. So you would have had, like, I mean, I actually think you would have had something like what we talked about, because immediately when we walked out, we immediately went into, like, crisis mode and tried to figure out how we would have fixed the film.
Mm.
And basically, we sat down and decided it would have been awesome to just play people against each other. I think that's the best aspect this story could have gone. Just have maybe a bunch of little freakouts or have some weird stuff kind of happening, but just have no conclusion to it. So in essence, you walk out going, was it?
And the fact that the security guards couldn't hear what was going on, they can only see what's going on. The lights keep going off. You're in the dark and you wouldn't know what's actually happening there. It's the thing I said to you the right after we saw the film. I said, the problem I have with M. Night Shyamalan for the last decade at least, I mean, okay, I'm a diehard Sixth Sense fan. I really like The Sixth Sense. I think it was very clever. And as I said to you, I think he blew his load completely on one film and has never been able to get back to that. Okay.
Yeah.
But that aside, every film that he's made from there, the problem I have with him is he takes himself so literally. Mm. There's no subtlety to anything that he does. He says, I'm going to make a film about the devil, so therefore it's the devil.
Yeah.
And doesn't let you build to that conclusion. This is not a spoiler, guys. Mm. It's the devil.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like you sit there and go, I was actually hoping that beyond hope that it wasn't actually going to be about the devil in the end. I was hoping it would be about paranoia and humans just going crazy and all this weirdness that was going on in there. And what if it wasn't really about the devil, but that's what they were blaming it on?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Or even if you did have the devil, maybe it was just an influence of that devil.
Exactly.
But it was just so literal. It's like,
and the other thing that screams of rewrites is the interaction between the main detective who basically ends up overseeing this whole project and one of the guys in the elevator, because it not only fails, but it feels like it was unnecessarily added in. It's like that storyline does not help the film at all. And it gets thrown in the last 5 minutes with any major significance.
Oh, and without spoiling it, but the last little interchange of dialogue is just pointless.
Yep. You're sitting there going, I don't care. This doesn't change the story.
Mm.
And yeah, no, I just.
And really, it's also doubling up because we'd already had the resolution to it.
Yeah.
And then to have a second resolution to it kind of felt like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And there was actually part of me that was going, I'm expecting a very different resolution here. It's an M. Night Shyamalan film. I'm waiting for something really drastic to happen. And it doesn't happen. And just peters off into this nothingness, you know?
And last thing, when we eventually do get the devil on screen, right? It is laughable. It is laughable. Like, For a situation that is based so heavily around the idea of thriller aspects and kind of a mild sense of horror, which is what this film tries to play on, you fuck those scenes up really badly. Because when me and Celine start laughing in the cinema over one of their fright gags, where it's basically like the light goes out, the light flickers back on, and there's someone with a mummy face, and you're sitting there going, what? Because it has no relevance.
No.
There's no reason for it to be there. There is no connection. There is no connection to what that thing is or where it was. Was it the devil? Is that what the devil looks
like? But as I say, it's also in the trailer, so you know it's coming. Yeah. And you sit there and go, and it's just this flash, and it's gone so fast that, you know, you sit there and go, why?
Yeah, so that doesn't fit. And then when you actually see the devil, it's like when it flicks on for 1 second, it worked. When it starts talking to him, it's all over. Like, the audience are just sitting there going, this isn't scary, or... And,
and I'm sorry, look, minor spoiler, but when you have the devil issue a line like, damn.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to you, or something like that. It's like, you sit there and go, really? That's what the devil's going to say? You know?
Yeah, no. It really... It fell apart in those scenes, and I actually do get really frustrated.
Northy says, I'm the devil, derp.
It really is like that. Like, there's no connection. You don't get a devil sense out of this thing. I think what really would have worked, like, and again, these are small rewrites that came to me in 1 second of thinking about it, but if you wanted to really scare the audience, right, and you want to connect that scare scene to something in the film so it actually has some level of depth, what you should have had is when the lights flick on, one of the characters has black eyes and is looking at the person in shot. So it's like you have no idea what that was. And again, it gives you that sense that now you're focusing on that character. And it did that so heavily in this film. It tries to play off each character
as kind
of possibly. And if you did it
different characters, you'd never know who it was. It's jumping from person to person, you know? Exactly.
Oh, God, and that would have really freaked the crap out of you because you would be terrified over who it is. But the problem is, it's so obviously directed that you and me knew, in fact, all three of us, because we are all film buffs, knew at the start of that film who it was going to be.
Yeah. And if you watch that trailer and go, I think it's that person, you're probably right.
Exactly.
From the trailer, you can pick it.
Because it's just simple filmmaking. And it's the fact that if you think for more than 2 seconds about who they're trying to avoid having the camera on, that's your guy.
Yeah.
And 90% of the time in films that don't have really good storylines, that's what the problem will be, is that you know who it is before you get to the end.
And then you've got all the stupid stuff going on around it. You sit there and say they give you a reason why these five people were picked.
Exactly.
They give you a reason why these five people were picked. But that reason doesn't make any sense when you start considering that all the people who are dying outside of the elevator. Yeah. And you're going, why are they all dying?
Well, it does have that one line at some stage where it's like people just start to die because they get in his way. And it's like, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but I didn't buy that because some of these people weren't really getting in the way.
Yeah.
You know, and you sit there and look at it and go, you know, if the devil is controlling the situation in the sense that the elevator is stopped, then it doesn't matter whether the guy gets the power back on or not.
Yeah.
The elevator is going to be stopped. Exactly. So why fry him? You know, it's like you sit there and look at it and go, why? Why are these people dying? They didn't seem to be bad people, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like you sit there and go, there's logic problems all the way through it. There are positive notes to be had. Positive notes are, it's really well shot.
Yeah.
It looks great, you know?
James from Melbourne has it perfectly when he says, giving a reason takes the fear away.
Damn straight.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And you can give the reason, but give it at the end. You give the reason too early, and then we're over.
The true feeling of fear and terror comes from the concept that people or a force is just doing something because it's bad. Mm. We can't deal with that. And that's the point. That's what makes something truly terrifying. That's why zombies used to be terrifying, because the concept is they have no reason for doing. They just get up and they eat.
And there's no reason for them to exist.
Exactly.
They just get up and do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a problem I'm having with Walking Dead, but that's a whole different issue.
Yes.
That's a whole different issue. And we have an email about that, which for the life of me, I've lost where my email
is. Look, I mean, demons as a force throughout horror are truly terrifying because it's the concept that they don't need reason. You don't need a connection to make them bad. They are just bad. They are bad personified. Mm. And I didn't get that feeling in this. The devil was just this kind of dude playing with a bunch of people, and he didn't even seem to really get what he was doing. It was like a true devil would have wanted them to tear themselves apart.
And isn't the old saying that the I don't remember what the exact quote is, but isn't it something like the best trick the devil ever played was the trick that you didn't know was being played? You know,
is convincing the world he didn't exist.
Exist, that's right. So why would he want an audience?
Exactly. And more to the point, I think, again, it comes back to the fact that this would have been a much better film if it had been about the fact that he was making them turn on themselves. Because that is, in essence, what you would want to do.
Mm-hmm. Because they even make a point in the film, though, where the little Hispanic guy actually says, the devil likes you to watch.
Yeah.
But that doesn't go along with the mythology of the devil. The devil doesn't want you to watch.
Yeah.
The devil doesn't want you to believe that he really exists. You know what I mean? He just plays with you. So why would the camera have been left on?
Yeah.
Camera would have gone out. They wouldn't have known what was going on in there, and that would have made it much more horrifying.
Exactly.
I mean, the whole thing from beginning to end was not scary. You sit there and go, it's really nicely shot. As I say, the actors all did a fine job. In fact, I was very impressed with, and I'm going to massacre the name again, Bojana Novakovic, who is an Australian actress who is in the series Satisfaction.
Yeah.
Very pretty girl. She's got black hair in this. I didn't think much of her in Satisfaction. She does a good job in this, you know?
Yeah.
The Indian guy is particularly sleazy, you know?
Yeah.
Joaquin Woodbine is big and tough, and that's what he does. The Iraqi soldier engineer guy is good, you know? And you sit there and look at it and go, all of the actors are doing a fine job. They have nothing to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
There is nothing to work with. The script is just a vacant lot.
And it's funny because I think the average person is going to walk out of this film and say, that wasn't that bad. But the thing that lets itself down, and we say this all the time in the show, the thing that really lets this film down is its mediocrity.
Absolutely. And that's what I was about to say. When we first came out of it, I said, you know what? I didn't even hate it.
Yeah.
It didn't even warrant being a hate. It was just what it was.
That's the kind of film that I would watch at the DVD store when I can't find anything
even
else.
Better, late night television. You're sitting there in your living room. It's midnight. The midnight movie comes on. It feels like it's a made for television movie. Anyway, it's only 80 minutes long, for God's sake. You know, and you sit there and go, oh, it's on late night television, I'll watch it. It's kind of like The Manitou or something, you know. Mega Piranha, you know. You just watch it and go, it's what it is, you know. And you go, it is decidedly mediocre, it's decidedly average, and is evidenced by all the reviews out there at the moment. If you look at the Rotten Tomatoes score, it is 50%. You look at IMDb, it's like 5.5 out of 10. It's like right there. Everybody's basically saying it's mediocre. It's all it is, you know. Anyway, so
two things I want to point out because the chat have been asking us things. Number one, no, not quite Wolverine angry. There is very few films on Earth that will make me Wolverine angry. And it does sound a lot like the clues from Heavy Rain. The writing is very much like Heavy Rain.
Nobody says Jason, though.
Right? Yeah, no, but the whole thing about Heavy Rain that makes it fail so badly is the fact that the storyline is so mediocre, and it's exactly the same thing with this.
All right, I'm just doing a quick... keep talking to these people for a minute, because I'm doing a quick IMDb search, because we've just been asked, what else did the writer write? So I'm going to find out what else the writer wrote for you. Just give me 2 seconds here.
Well, look, one last thing that I want to break down while we're sort of, you know, trying to kill time is the fact that I think that the people that did the gore and the lighting and all the work in the elevator also did a fantastic job
As I say, the making of the film, there's that one shot where he looks up and the piece of glass is falling and all that. Really nicely shot. And in fact, one of the things I will give it as a plus is, and I don't think you were quite as taken by it, but Celine and I both really like the opening shots where they actually shoot New York upside down. You see it in the trailer, but there are these extended
shots.
What
are the relevance of that?
Well, I think it's the whole thing of the world is turned upside down because the devil's coming to town. And all, because at the end, the world's back right side up again. You know, it's like, because he said, everything goes weird when the devil comes in. So I think that's what they were trying to do. And I don't say it's good for a story point, but as a piece of photography, you've never seen New York quite like that with these buildings kind of hanging from the top of the screen and stuff. And so it's kind
of... I just thought it looked like upside down photography. And I don't think it takes much effort or intelligence to take a shot and flip it upside down.
All right, so the director... Just so you know, the director, Josh, directed one of your favorite films. He directed Quarantine.
Oh. Well, look, no, that's not fair. That's not fair. I can't comment on Quarantine because I won't watch it because I don't think it needs to exist.
Oh, you haven't actually... I thought you hated it.
No. I hate it on a concept basis, the same way I'm not particularly a fan of Let the Right One In, because I just think these films don't need to exist. There is a perfectly good version.
The writer of Devil also wrote 30 Days of Night, Hard Candy... Earth, Final Conflict, TV. He's done a lot of television. So Vanishing Sun, Lois and Clark, JAG, 2000 Leagues Under the Sea, Earth, Final Conflict.
Right,
so we're a lot of television.
He's basically the high-end version of mediocrity.
Yeah, and he's written 3 screenplays for cinema. The 3 screenplays are Hard
Candy. Hard Candy is the one exception.
Yeah, Hard Candy is supposed to be really good. I haven't seen it, but it's supposed to be really good. 30 Days of Night, I still haven't seen to this day. And Devil. So yep. Those are his three screenplays. There's your information for the writer, Brian Nelson. But as I say, I don't think this feels like Brian Nelson. Anyway, it feels like M. Night Shyamalan. So I think Brian Nelson probably wrote it, and then M. Night Shyamalan completely rewrote it, is my guess. Mm. And then doesn't take credit for it. But it feels like his work. Anyway, we're going to move on. Our final opinions. Would you recommend it?
No. No. I mean, okay, maybe if you were the video store scenario is what I'm saying. If you're at a video store and you're like, meh, there's nothing else to watch, I'm getting six movies and I need one more, grab it. Yeah. It won't make you angry, and it won't be a bad experience. It's kind of good. It's just that it's very, very average.
Yeah. Look, it is a rental. It is a late night television movie. It is a rental when it's a weekly rental. It is not a new release. Run out and grab it. It is okay to look at. It's well made, but it's just not much of a film.
Yeah,
is really what it comes down to. It's just mediocre, and mediocrity for me is worse than being bad.
Exactly. If you're bad, at least I can get angry. You know what it is. Celine actually points this out a lot because it's usually a comment talked about with art.
That's an art comment, absolutely.
Exactly. The reality is, if you make me angry, you still got an emotion out of me.
Provoke an emotion. Exactly. Absolutely.
And that's all we're trying to do here. We're just trying to provoke some sort of emotion, and I got no emotion out of that film. So therefore, it failed because it did nothing to me. And I will not remember it, and it will not stay in my mind at all.
Well, it's funny. Our segue here for moving on, by the way, is James in Melbourne has just said, rent Empire Strikes Back, that's never bad. Well, James in Melbourne, how about this?
There is no escape. Don't make me destroy you. Luke, you do not yet realize your importance. You have only begun to discover your power. Join me, and I will complete your training. With our combined strength, we can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy.
I'll never join you!
If you only knew the power of the dark side, Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father.
No. That's not true. That's impossible.
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
Gotta love that music. All right, why am I playing a clip from Empire Strikes Back? And James from Melbourne, thank you so much for that segue, because that was brilliant. I had that lined up ready to go. Irvin Kershner, director of The Empire Strikes Back, died this week at age 87. I thought, we don't do a lot of obituaries, but we do obituaries for people who are very important, and Irvin Kershner will be missed. He is the man who directed what is arguably the best Star Wars film of the entire series. He had a whole body of work. Unfortunately, he did die at 87 this week. So our hats off and rest in peace, Irvin. Also dying this week at 84 years old, which is also a great loss to us, is this man.
The stewardess said...
Oh.
Both pilots.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Doctor, I've checked everyone. Mr. Stryker's the only one.
What flying experience have you had?
Well, I flew single-engine fighters in the Air Force, but this plane has four engines. It's an entirely different kind of flying, altogether.
It's an entirely different kind of flying.
All right. So, unfortunately, Leslie Nielsen also dies this week at the age of 84, and he will be missed as well. Leslie Nielsen, who started his career as being a legitimate actor, a very serious actor in films like Forbidden Planet and Poseidon Adventure, and when the Zucker brothers talked him into doing a comedy piece on the American comedy film Flying High, in America known as Airplane, he basically reinvented his career in one fell swoop and became this deadbeat, deadpan comedian. who went on to be the king of the spoof films for a long time. And yes, I got very tired of them after a while, but there is no denying the fact that Leslie Nielsen was always a very funny man.
Yeah.
And he dies at 84 this week. So those are two sad moments, but let's move on to something a little bit brighter. I was going to throw a trailer in, but because we just watched two videos, I'm just going to jump to the next story. We'll come back to the trailer in a second. And I'm going to bring up this photo, which is Peter Jackson playing with the new Red Epic. This is the new camera by Red. For those who don't know, Red is a 4K digital camera. They used it for shooting of The Social Network, and they used it for shooting of the Shea films. Steven Soderbergh is a big advocate of the Red cameras. Very, very, very high resolution. They basically look like film when projected. They're fantastic. Mm. The new Red Epic is basically a modular camera, which can be custom put together. If you look at the side of the camera, you'll see it's got lots of little components. Each one breaks apart, and it can be broken into all sorts of things. They're going to, Jackson's company has just taken purchase of 30 customized Red Epic cameras, 3D. So they're shooting The Hobbit in 3D using the new Epic Reds. So it's not a conversion job. They are going to shoot it with these new Epic cameras, and I thought that was just really sweet. These cameras are amazing because the actual body of the camera is only like this big. They're tiny, but then you add all the rig to it, and they build up. So, Red is a really interesting company, and we keep our eye on them a lot because they do some really good stuff. If you go to the Red website, which you can find on Google, you can actually find a list of all the film and television shows that have been shot with Reds, and I think some of them are going to surprise you, and you're going to sit there and go, really? That was video? I thought that was film, like Social Network, which looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, we are going to go to this trailer now and have a quick look at this trailer. This is HBO. We actually showed an early teaser to this many months ago now. HBO has a new TV series, a limited miniseries coming out called Game of Thrones, based on George R.R. Martin's fantasy epic. And this new trailer came out this week, which gives us a little bit more of a view into it. And I got to say, I'm actually really keen because HBO does some really good stuff, and I'm always keen for a good fantasy epic. So here we go. This is the trailer for Game of Thrones.
You understand why I did it?
He ran away. He was a deserter.
You understand why I had to kill him?
I, Eddard, the House Stark, sentence you to die.
The man who passes the sentence should swing the sword.
My sweet summer child, what do you know about fear?
There's a war coming, Ned. I don't know when,
but it's coming.
Fear is for the long night, when the snows fall 100 feet deep.
You were trained to follow.
I was trained to kill.
Fear is for the winter.
Winter is coming.
That looks pretty cool.
Curious. That's as far as I'll say.
Okay, we got to quickly cover some ground here. James from Melbourne has said, "Frackin' Hobbit, six-hour film that could have been told in 90 minutes." Okay, first of all, it is not quite as... My understanding is it's not quite the same situation as Harry Potter. My understanding of the situation is that, first of all, I think The Hobbit, you would need a good three-hour film to tell.
In
depth, because there's a lot that happens in The Hobbit, even though it's a small book. There's a lot that happens. But my understanding is that the two films that they're making back-to-back is actually The Hobbit is one of them, and the second film is actually a bridging film that goes between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. It's not The Hobbit broken into two pieces.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious, because apparently the middle film is kind of a creation of... Peter Jackson's based on all of the appendices and stuff like that of Lord of the Rings. So he's kind of delving into the history, and they're making something new out of all of that. So that's what I'm actually very interested in. So I don't believe it's one book just split into two. It is actually The Hobbit and another film that they're shooting back to back. So I'm curious. If I'm wrong about that, I will apologize, but that's my understanding of the situation. And from what I understand, Warner Brothers just wanted two films.
Yeah.
Of course they did, right? And that's how they're gonna get their two films. Now I've got one for you, Josh, and this is the one that just disgusts me. We all know that the Uncharted movie was coming, and today or this week we should say that we just got our evidence that it is true. It is impossible to make a good video game movie, apparently, because they cast Marky Mark as the lead in Uncharted. They've cast Mark Wahlberg in Uncharted, which I just think is disgusting.
Look, it's really hard for me to get angry about this now because I've been ranting about this for a week and I'm just out of energy on the whole situation. It's like, look, it's more than a letdown now. Like, it's more than just sort of a, you fucked
up. Well, we're
up.
Not even going to be expecting a good film now. That's exactly. We're going to be expecting Max Payne again.
Like, I mean, I implore every geek out there to just take a stand on this one. Please, I mean that. Just do what I'm doing and just don't. Just don't even go there.
I had such high hopes for this one.
Yeah, but I'm past caring now, dude. I've made a deal. Unless it just gets universally 100% accepted where it's like, they're like, Lord of the Rings, stand aside. This film rewrites history. I'm just going to fucking avoid it. Yeah. And I've never done that before. I may pick it up on, you know, video or something like that from a video store where I don't own it or anything like that. But I will not be paying cinema dollars for this because you guys just have to learn that if the fans want something, there may be a fucking reason for it. Okay? And it's like, don't just think you know better than us, right? We've thought about this. And yes, everyone is aware that, look, now that he has done Castle, he's a little bit on the podgy side. Actors can get fit.
He can get in right? shape for it.
And Bruce Willis is like freaking years older than anyone that should possibly be doing stunts.
Just to help Rogue Sire, yes. Nathan Fillion not only wanted the role, but every single player of the game wanted him for the role.
He was made for the situation. There are thousands of choices you could have tried to make this work,
yeah.
Right? Choosing Mark Wahlberg just says to me that you just looked at it and went, what's a great cash cow? And you know what?
But I don't even agree with that, because when was the last time Mark Wahlberg film actually did huge business?
Well, Max Payne did all right.
Right. But I'm talking about huge. But universally, everybody hated it.
It doesn't matter. It still sells because we all go see it because we want video game movies.
And see, and this is the short-sighted nature of a film studio. They look at it and go, oh, it made money. But you look at it and go, yes, but everybody universally hated it, which means if you put him into another video game movie, the chances are all those people who paid for Max Payne are not going to pay for the next one. You know what I mean? I just think it's such a bad idea. I think everything about this just sucks. And I'm very, very disturbed by it. I feel like they don't even try to make a good film out of video game movies. They're not even trying anymore.
No.
You know?
No, they're not. They're not. They're just not, dude. It doesn't matter anymore. To me, the concept is now dead. You guys had your shot. Like, I mean, Halo's my next redemption piece if it ever goes ahead, right? But this one was so simple. We didn't have to do anything, right? You had to set it in the jungle. You had to have big action spectacles. You had to have a director that knows how to handle
and
mild
put in
campness.
Nathan Fillion.
Exactly. Someone that would have been perfect is the guy that directed Welcome to the Jungle. Not a great film, right? But the style suits. That really over-the-top ridiculousness, lots of witty banter and dialogue, and just throw Nathan Fillion. Or you know what? I'm willing to accept maybe that they didn't want to go with that choice. But pick someone that can make a joke work. And Mark Wahlberg is not one of those people.
Mark Wahlberg doesn't have a funny bone.
I'm there.
All right, well, let's shake that off and have a bit of fun. Now, this is actually kind of not relevant to Australia because we don't have planters nuts. Yeah. In Australia, but there's a company called Planters, and their symbol is Mr. Peanut, who is a peanut with glasses and a little top hat, and so he's a little cartoon character.
Right.
They've just given rebirth to the Planters, Mr. Nut, and for this new series of commercials, and he's voiced by Robert Downey Jr.
Ha!
And the first one came out, and I thought we'd share that here. Now, there is a rumor, I haven't been able to get confirmation on this or not, that one of the other voices here is Val Kilmer. So it's almost like reuniting the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang cast. But yeah. I haven't got confirmation. But Mr. Peanut is Robert Downey Jr. So here's the new Mr. Peanut ad for Christmas.
At Planners, we know how to throw a remarkable holiday party, just serve classy snacks, and be a gracious host, no matter who shows up. Richard, didn't think you were going to make it.
Hey, sorry about last week. I don't know what got into me.
Yeah, well, forgive and forget, kind of.
I don't think so.
Do you like nuts?
So the rumor is that the Richard is Val Kilmer. So.
Wow. That's, yeah, it's kind of funny.
Oh, yeah. After the other night. That's okay. rubbing the bandage on the back of
his
head.
That's really messed up.
The link for that will be on our show notes, so those who are listening to the audio podcast can go have a listen to that. Yeah. And last but not least, I've got one other story here, which is that Jeff Bridges apparently is very, very impressed by the whole Tron Legacy creating a digital character of himself. Mm. He's even pondering, quote unquote, Jeff Bridges, this technology means I'd never have to work again in my life. I could still make films.
Nice.
So Bridges is quite impressed by this young version of himself. And it said, I spend most of my time avoiding work. Honestly, I do my best to, I do my best to turn everything down.
I love that.
All
man.
I could say about Jeff Bridges is, dude.
That's so, really cool, man.
So he is very impressed by his digital character. And if you watch the trailer, you'll see the digital character that they've created for him. It's actually pretty good. It's a little bit Uncanny Valley in some places, but it works pretty well. I'm curious to see it on the big screen.
What's this?
This is the Clue digital head that they've created for young Jeff Bridges. But speaking of people who like to work with artificial things, Michael Bay is in the news again. Because Michael Bay...
What's he doing now?
No, you'll like this.
Okay.
Now, for our audio listeners, there's no dialogue here and it's just music. So sit back and enjoy the music. You can find the link in our show notes. But Michael Bay last year directed a Victoria's Secret commercial, if you remember. And we all thought this was the funniest thing we'd seen in a long time. But this year, he's done it again. And so this is the Victoria's Secret 2010 Christmas special. Everybody turn your volume down. It's a loud one. All right, so here's Michael Bay's 2010 holiday Victoria's Secret commercial.
Please tell me explosions are coming.
Actually, no, lacking explosions.
Gunfire?
No. Oh, sorry, guys. Lots of wind machines, apparently.
So he probably ran out of money for explosions. Oh, really? Without explosions, the man just doesn't do it for me.
No, look, last year's was better. He had the helicopters. That, by the way, that girl right there that just was on, that's the new star of Transformers. That's the girl who replaced Megan Fox. That's Rosie Huntley, whatever her name is. So there you go. There's the new mic. All I can say is all it is cleavage and wind machines in slow motion. Mm. Whereas last year's, he had helicopters and explosions and guns and wow.
You were selling every part of male fantasy as opposed to just one part.
That's right. It's like he almost went, we don't need the helicopters. We got boobs.
Yeah.
You need the helicopters.
No.
Got to have the helicopters and the
big
petrol
explosions.
You got to
understand what you're good at, man. Otherwise, the whole thing just doesn't work. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So that brings us to a conclusion of our news for this week. We do have our list of five coming up, our lists of five. Now, this was a hard one. Now, let's try and go through this one more time. It is a list of five films in confined places, not claustrophobic, but basically you could also word it as confined locations. Okay. So basically films that are kept to one primary place. Like with Devil, it doesn't matter if we do go outside of that place, but the primary piece of action takes place in one place. So you could argue, we haven't seen it yet, I doubt it would go on the list anyway, but something like Unstoppable would be a film like this because it really is about two guys on a train.
Mm.
Even though there's stuff happening outside of Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, I shouldn't be throwing stuff out because we could be using these. But yeah. Anyway, so we're going to try this. I've got my list here, and I actually just thought of another one while I was doing it, but it's not on my list, so I won't put it in there. But let's have a look and say, Josh, what's your number five?
Oh, man, I was hoping you were going to leave.
Oh, I'll go first. Okay, no, I'll go first. My number five is Phone Booth with Colin Farrell. It's a flawed film. It's not perfect, but I really did enjoy it, and I really enjoyed the concept of it, in particular with him trapped in that phone box while everything else is happening around him and, you know, the whole mind games that are being played. I actually really enjoyed it. I think it needed work, but I think I was so overwhelmed by the fact that it was Joel Schumacher doing something different.
Yeah.
And Joel Schumacher had been out of control for some time, and to see him doing something so grounded was like, hey, this is nice, you know? Yeah. So I actually quite like that.
My number five is Saw, which when you take away the parody
I'll
and everything...
I'll help you out. My number four is Saw, so yep. There we go.
Saw was one of those films where it was just... It was low budget. It worked well. It was in a confined space. You had a few... even outside the initial room, you had a few other actors. It felt very confined around this world. And, the original idea was very inventive and very...
Yeah, look, I have to say, I'll jump straight into my number four is Saw as well, so we can talk about it. But I think Saw is a great film.
Yeah.
I hated all the sequels.
Yeah.
I think Saw is clever.
Yeah.
It's a very clever film about two guys trapped in a room, chained, you know, and so forth, right? And there's stuff happening outside, and Jigsaw's traps were clever. And it was just clever, and it wasn't grotesque. I think the problem with the Saw films is they became grotesque.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, my number four is definitely Saw. I liked it a lot.
Okay,
my number four
is a movie that you may have seen or you may not have. Again, not all these films are fantastic, world-changing movies, but for what they did on the budget and the concept that they did, there was a film that was shot basically entirely in a hotel room, shot on like video, so it's very grainy and it really just suits because it's just about these three characters that all went to high school together, and it's just. These stories unravel as the people are in the room together and as they talk. It was called Tape, and
I
it had
seen that.
Uma Thurman and the guy that plays House's friend in House.
Oh, he was from Dead Poets Society.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's his name again? Oh,
yeah,
God.
Him and Ethan Hawke. It's the three of them in a room. And look, I mean, it's not terrible, but it's really kind of good. And no, it wasn't One Night in Paris. Thank you, though.
Although that should have gone on my list. That was not bad. All right. My number three is Extremities with Farrah Fawcett, made in the 1980s, about a girl who a guy breaks in. He's going to rape her.
Yeah.
And then she turns the tables on him and basically beats him to a pulp and keeps him in a fireplace. And it's a really good film. It's also the film that got her an Oscar nomination. So terrific film based on a stage play and takes place all in her house. It's all in basically the living room. They go into the bedroom as well. But it's a real and it's harrowing. It's a really harrowing film.
Yeah.
So very good. All right. Number three.
Number three was suggested by my, to take a leaf out of your book, my beautiful girlfriend Celine, who reminded me of course, one of her favorite films, and also one that I think is absolutely amazing, which is The Descent.
I actually didn't put The Descent on my list on purpose because it was covered so much in claustrophobic films, so I kind of kept it off, but it was so close.
I'm not sure if that was that on my list?
I think it was on mine, or it might have been on Celine's.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was on somebody's list in claustrophobic films, so I kind of went, I want to, but I'm not going to, you know. Mm. But yeah, I agree with you. It's talk about confined locations.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's a very good film. And forget the sequel. See Descent if you haven't seen it.
Don't see the sequel. Just
okay, my number two is another one of those films where I don't think it's a perfect film, but I think it works for when it is confined. It works best. When it gets out of the confined space, it doesn't work so well, which is Red Eye. And I think the scene where they're in the first 45 minutes where they're in the plane and it's just the two of them sitting side by side, basically playing mind games, that is awesome. Mm. It doesn't quite fulfill itself in the second half, but the first half is really good.
Yeah.
And it shows you what two good actors and a really good director and a good screenplay can do.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard to do. It's what Devil couldn't do.
Yeah.
You know? It couldn't get
keep
that
you interested.
Keep you interested when it really is just that situation.
Mm.
Okay, your number two.
My number two is a film that I think, like yours, kind of fails. If you put it, you know, as a whole. But the film starts out with a group of people waking up with no recollection of what's happened. in this one building, which has been locked from the inside, and no one has the keys. So it's like no one can get out. No one remembers who they are. People either wake up in weird locations or weird situations, and no one can quite figure out what's happened. It was actually called Unknown, and the lead star was Jim Caviezel.
I like Jim Caviezel. I haven't seen this. I love doing these lists because you always bring up films I've never seen.
Yeah. So look, I mean, universally, I think it fails as a film, especially when it starts unraveling its thing, because it doesn't break any rule. It's a very by-the-numbers kind of a film, but it's still really intriguing to kind of figure out what's happened, and everyone's kind of worried about everyone. It's that great sense of paranoia that you can get in those situations, and as the film plays out and finishes, it's kind of, you finish and you're like, yeah, that was all right. Mm. Like, it's like what the best case scenario of Devil would have been.
Yeah.
Was that whole kind of walking out and going, that was different. That was inventive. They tried something. Mm-hmm. And that's really all I wanted out of it. And yeah, I thought it was a great film.
Fantastic. Okay. Before I go into my number one, I'm just going to say that the chat room's been throwing some stuff out. When we finish these lists, normally we sometimes have some honorary mentions. It's not so much honorary mentions, and I'm not going to put them in the forum. I'm just going to throw out some extra titles because this list was really hard.
Yeah.
And things are coming to me now after doing the listing. You're going, oh, I should have thought of that. I should have thought of that. I should have thought. So they're not actually going to be official list titles, but there are a couple of extra ones that we'll throw in. Mm. One of them's already been mentioned in the chat room, and we'll come back to that. But my number one is the original, not the remake. But the original 1976 Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah.
This is all set in a police station
that
is basically sieged by gangs and this faceless gangs outside who are just riddling the windows with bullets and keeping everybody down. This film was basically a kind of reworking of the Western Rio Bravo, but put into a contemporary environment. John Carpenter had very limited resources to work with. The film was made for less than $1 million, and it is sensational. I mean, it is just a tense, tense film. It's all at night, it's all dark, and they're just trapped in an abandoned police station. The remake was crap, quite frankly. The remake just didn't succeed at all. But Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13 broke a lot of ground when it came out. And yes, it's dated. Yes, some of the acting isn't the best, but you really put it together as an entire film. I love this film. It's he made it. It was his first big film.
Yeah.
After he did Dark Star, his graduation film, and before he did Halloween, this was where he kind of came from. Yeah. So Assault on Precinct 13 is my number one, 1976. Yours?
Evil Dead.
Oh, yes! Another one I forgot all about.
Yeah. More the first one, because the second one kind of, you know, sort of takes off outside the house.
I would put one and two, actually, because two is basically a remake of the first one anyway. Yeah. But
like, one really was all in the house. And, like, I mean, two's probably got a lot better of the things, but he does go out to the shed, and there's, you know, there's him with, you know, the chainsaws and stuff.
Number one
does
have the famous tree raping scene, though. So.
But kind of it's still that feeling that they can't leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the evil is all around them. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, I mean, I just think it's an incredibly tense film. Even
somebody put Hail to the King, baby. This is long before it became a joke.
Yeah.
I love, don't get me wrong, I love Army of Darkness, but that is not Evil Dead. Yeah. Evil Dead. I forgot all about Evil Dead. God damn it. A couple of the ones, one was thrown in the chat room before, which was Rope, the Hitchcock film, which is set in one apartment and done in long 10-minute takes. Absolutely. Yeah. Another Hitchcock one is Lifeboat, which occurred to me. And one that occurred to me while we were doing the show, didn't even occur to me, was Identity, the one with John Cusack, all set in that motel.
Yeah.
With all the people, the strangers all thrown in together in one place, and what is the secret to it? Not, once again, not a brilliant film, but an intriguing enough film that you sit there going, this is really odd. So there's a lot of them. And of course, neither of us mentioned Cube.
Yeah.
Which is probably the epitome of a single location, because even though it takes place in several cubes, it was actually only one set. And they just kind of shifted the actors from one location to another, but it was actually only one set. It was very cleverly handled.
Look, I mean, Cube is a great film. I didn't put it on my list so much as I like that film, it's just, it wouldn't, I only ever do five.
Mm.
And these ones, I felt, did it better.
So the ones that I've just thrown out there don't actually count towards our five, and they get vaulted because they're not on the list. The lists will stand as they are. Just a few of them that I was just thinking about afterwards, going, boy, this is a hard list, you know? We actually have our lists of five predetermined for us for next week. We have a listener request. It was actually came in last week, and we should have done it for this week, but because we saw this, we decided to do a confined locations one. But listener Geek Betty actually asked for one and said that we should do... She says in her email, I'm watching Blazing Saddles for the first time since the first time at the cinema back in the day. My head is about to explode. It's clever, the talent is great, but its execution is so politically offensive to quote-unquote modern sensibilities, it could never be remade.
Yeah,
in its current form. I mean, let's face it. This is the one, excuse my language, guys, but this is the one where he puts a gun to his head and says, one false move and the nigger gets it, right?
Yeah.
And he's black, right? Yeah. He's going to shoot himself. So, you know, yeah, she's right. This is a film that you could never make today the same way it was made in the 70s.
Yeah.
Made me think of a list of, quote unquote, five classic movies that could never be remade. So that's our list for next week.
That's going to take some
five thinking. Classic movies that could never be remade. Now, I don't actually believe that's possible. Anything can be remade. The question is, could you remake it
tastefully,
like it was? You know, that, I mean, that's the question, really. Yeah. You could remake Blazing Saddles today, but it wouldn't be Blazing Saddles. It wouldn't be that film because that film was a product of its time.
Yeah,
I think that's the issue.
Yeah, so it's kind of that mindset that you could never quite 100% recreate.
That's right. You could never recreate that moment in time because it was a product of its time.
Yeah.
It's like you couldn't remake Blackula today. You get the point I'm going with,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It was a product of the 70s.
I don't
right?
think anyone should make that.
Anyway, so that's our list for next week. We're going to have to think long and hard on that one. So thank you very much, Geek Betty, for that. And I also have another email, and we're going to address this. The reason I'm going to bring this up very quickly is just to let you know that we did receive it, and it's great. But I want to say that we are going to address this in a week's time. Okay? Yeah. It is actually from Rogue Sire. It's a long email and some links and so forth, but really the part that the nuts and bolts of it came down and said, most likely won't be able to make it to the chat room, although Rogue Sire has been in our chat room. So Rogue Sire, how are you? Says, I was hoping you might mention your thoughts on the direction The Walking Dead TV series is taking. I am only new to the comic. I started to read it after you and Josh talked so passionately about it on the show, but quickly became addicted. I'm just changing cameras here. Big, addicted to it and loving every issue I read. Good for you. I do too. The TV series, however, seems to be going in a different direction than the comic. I realize that as a TV series, they're always going to stray from the original comic book storyline. However, I think they have started to stray too far, and I don't think it is having the same impact and character development as the comic. I have been listening to the Talking Dead cast, which are our friends Brad, Jesse and Charlie over at moviefanhouse.com or their new site, reboundradio.com. So there's their plug. I don't have to do their plug again. Okay, remind me of that. And I agree with their thoughts, and I'm finding myself a little disappointed with the last couple of episodes. It started off great with the first three episodes, but started to leave me a little underwhelmed in episodes 4 and 5. And it goes on, and we'll read the rest of that later. The reason why I thought we'd bring this up is to let you know that not to step on the Talking Dead test toes, because we respect them, and I believe that, Josh, you're probably going to be on the show soon, and I was on the show in their first episode, but we are on this show next week going to give you our summary of the series. Considering that this week will be the last episode, we will watch that, and then we will actually give you our summary of season one next week on Film Actually. The reason I'm going to do this as well, because Josh and Celine and I sat down, funny you mentioned this, I got this email right after, we sat down right after seeing Devil, and we got into an impromptu discussion about this exact topic, about the differences between the comic book and the series and the directions it was going, etc., etc. And we have differing opinions on it. And
I don't think so. Not anymore. We watched 5.
Oh, you watched 5. Thank God. Okay. Anyway, after 5 in particular, I was actually a little bit angry at the series, and I'm holding off until we see the final thing. Then what I want to do...
I'm not, because I want to ask Dave. 4 people I've spoken to this week have told me the same thing. There's a rumor flying around that after episode 4, all writers were fired.
I haven't heard this rumor.
Yeah, no, which is starting to really sit right with me.
It feels that way. It feels like
something went wrong on set, and I mean something big, because you watch 5,
whew, all right,
we
so
have a lot to talk about.
All right, we're going to do, next week is we're reviewing the animated film Megamind as our feature review. We're going to keep news short unless something really staggering happens, because I want to get into a Walking Dead discussion. And I'm putting out a invite, because they listen to the show, if Charlie and Brad and Jesse want to join us via Skype, because they've been doing their podcast all this time, they are more than welcome to join us on film actually next week as well. All right, so it's the invitation is out there. We're going to have a talk, a little bit of a summary talk about our feelings of it. Really, it's kind of for those people who aren't listening to Talking Dead Cast. If you are listening to Talking Dead Cast, well, listen to their show.
Yeah.
I actually would really like to. I know, Josh, you're supposed to be going on to the summary show.
The official announcement, I guess we can actually put it out because they're announcing it for me. We haven't actually finalized anything, but good on them, guys. I've been listening, so I'm aware of it.
And I would actually like to invite myself because I'll say, use my studio, use my Skype. I want to invite myself. I want to be on that summary show too because I got some words about this thing. Okay. So I got some words about this thing. So we will talk about this next week. Anyways, so there's a little bit of a preview for next week about what we're doing. And then, of course, the week after that, we are doing Tron Legacy, and then we are off for 2 weeks. So there's your preview of what's coming up over the December season. I've got some serious thoughts about this. So Rogue Sire, thank you for bringing this up. We will talk about this next week.
We will do what we do here at Geek, and we will make sure that we fulfill our promises.
Damn straight.
And we will talk very, very, very passionately.
Yeah, we will talk passionately. We'll set aside a good 20 minutes for that one because I think there's a couple of things. I'm actually quite irritated by a couple of the issues here, and we'll talk about that more next week. All right, agree or disagree with anything that we have to say on this show, or you've got some thoughts about The Walking Dead, please submit your thoughts on Walking Dead. We'll bring them up while we talk about it, okay? So any thoughts you have, if you've got voicemails that you want to have your voice heard about Walking Dead, anything like that, anything at all, feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail, Sydney number 02-8011-3167. We're not going to do a huge push and plug on everybody this week because we have an after show that's coming up and we have to get to it. I will just say that we have new buttons on our website. So if you actually go to geekactually.com, right in the top bar there, you will now find buttons for the forum. You'll find buttons to buy stuff at the gift shop. So you can, it's all easy to find. Okay. Yeah. So go have a look at geekactually.com. Our whole lives and our whole world is wrapped up in geekactually.com. Anything that we talk about, you can find there. Show notes, links, everything is there. We do have two other shows. Throw them out really quickly. Tech Actually, Geek Actually After Show. Once again, find it all at the website or search for it on iTunes. And we've already plugged the Movie Fan House and their new site, Rebound Radio. We also want to talk about very quickly the Real Junkies over at weekendronan.com. They have been absent for the last couple of weeks. I sent him a tweet recently and said, hey, where's your shows? They've now put up two shows. So they just had a little bit of a break there, it seems. But they're back, weekendronan.com, or search for them on iTunes, REEL Junkies. They're like us, but they drink tequila. Josh, tell us about your website.
RawDLC.com, it's a gaming website. We do a live show just like Dave, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. This week, not Tuesday at 8 p.m., but Monday at 8 p.m.
Are you just confusing me with times now?
Yeah. Monday, this is our last week for the year for a show. This week we are going out with a massive bang by going around and combining two podcasts together, recording it with video, and including alcohol. Mess will incur.
Oh, God, I'm tuning in for that.
Yeah.
All right. Now, just very quickly, if you want to follow our fan page, facebook.com.
Fan page.
It's facebook.com/geekactually. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DavidMcVeigh. All one word, my name, MCVAY. Just so in case you know how to spell it. Okay, I think we're done. I think we are done. And as I say, if you have lists of five of your own of that topic, the post for list of five will be up sometime this afternoon with our list of five that we mentioned on this show. Please feel free to add to that with any films that you'd like to add to our list of five in our forum, which you'll find at geekactually.com/forum. And if you want to try and guess what the opening clip is, I don't think it's a hard one this week. You'll find that in the forum as well.
If you fail, it's punishable by death.
I think so. You know. And I will remind you, go back and listen to the beginning of the podcast again. The name of the film is mentioned twice in the clip. Right? So that is just a quick one. All right. I think that's it. Now, we normally go out with a piece of soundtrack from the movie that we reviewed. However, it is December and it is Tron month. And we are all geeks, and we are hot under the collar to basically see this movie, and we can't wait. And I happen to have a copy of the soundtrack. Don't ask me where I got it from, but I have a copy of the soundtrack in advance of it coming out. So I have decided, and I haven't spoken to Josh about this, but I have decided that for the next 3 weeks, we are going to play selections from the Tron soundtrack, building us up to Tron coming out.
Wow.
So the soundtrack is by Daft Punk. They have been integral to the actual production of the film. Apparently, they approached the filmmakers and said, we really want to do this. And they have been involved in the filmmaking process since before they shot a single frame of film. So this soundtrack is tightly integrated and woven into the actual film itself. Mm. It's not just Daft Punk doing Daft Punk. It is Daft Punk doing Daft Punk with an 80-piece orchestra.
Which is quite possibly one of the most epic things
in the
world.
Which is awesome. So this is a track from the soundtrack. It's called Recognizer. And we'll go out with this. I'm going to say, in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And I'll see you next week, Josh.
Bye.
Bye, all.